Jairaja Madhava Kunyabhiya Hari Jairaja Madhava Kunyabhiya Hari Gopi Jana Bhalava Girvade Rari Gopi Jana Bhalava Girvade Rari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janarandana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabhihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabhiya Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabhiya Hari Jaya Vishnupad Paramahamsa Pragraja Kacharya Asto Karasata Sri Srimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shiro Prabhupada Ki Jaya Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jaya Shri Srinada Ki Jaya Gaura Premanandi All glories to some devotees All glories to some devotees All glories to some devotees all glories Shri Shri Guru Ngaranga Shri Prabhupada Ki Jaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya One of the things I was going to mention in the class, if we'll see if I get through my notes, was about the importance of association with devotees in order to make spiritual advancement. So I just personally had a nice experience of that because Mukya stood up to give the announcements, and as she neared the end, she said, there's a very special announcement today. And of course, my ego immediately said, oh, Mukya, don't say too many things about me. And then by the grace of Krishna, we needed to understand it's the birthday of a five-year-old. And then it came time to announce the speaker. She said, and Anuttam Prabhu is giving class today. So thank you, Lord, for helping me somehow crush my obnoxious false ego in the association of devotees. We're all so fortunate. So, okay, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text 43. Ta-ta. Ta-ta. Kala, Agni, Rudra Atma, Yat, Shrishtam, Idam, Atmanaha, Sam, Niyachati, tatkale gana anikam eva anila tatakalingni rudratma yachvistam idamatmanaha saniya chatti tatkale gana nikam ivanila tatakalinga rudratma yachvistam idamatmanaha saniya chatti tatkale gana nikam ivanilaha tatakalagni rudratma yachvistam idamatmanaha sanicha yatti tatkale gana nikam ivanilaha. Vaishnavis? Word means tata, thereafter at the end. Kala, destruction. Agni, fire. Rudra, atma, in the form of Rudra. Yat, whatever. Shrishtam, created. Idam, all these. Atmanaha, of his own. Some completely. Niyachati, annihilates. Tatkale, at the end of the millennium. Gana anikam, bunches of clouds. Eva, like that of. Anilaha, air. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Therefore, at the end of the millennium, the Lord Himself, in the form of Rudra, the destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind displaces the clouds. Please repeat. Thereafter, At the end of the millennium,
the Lord himself,
in the form of Rudra, the destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind displaces the clouds. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This creation is very appropriately compared to clouds. Clouds are created or situated in the sky, and when they are displaced, they remain in the same sky without manifestation. Similarly, the whole creation is made by the Supreme Personality of God in his form of Brahma. It is maintained by him in the form of Vishnu, and it is destroyed by him in the form of Rudra or Shiva, all in due course. This creation, maintenance, and destruction are nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita 8, 19, and 20 as follows. Bhuta gramasu eva yam bhutpa bhutva paliyate ratyagame vishalparta pravavatyahar agame parastas matupavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha yasa saveshu bhuteshu nasyatsu na vinashyati. The nature of the material world is that it is first created very nicely, then it develops very nicely. It's like you almost feel Prabhupada setting you up here. Like way to the end of the sentence. The nature of the material world is that it is first created very nicely, then it develops very nicely, and stays for a great number of years, even beyond the calculation of the greatest mathematician. But after that, it is again destroyed during the night of Brahma, without any resistance. And at the end of the night to Brahma, it is again manifesting as a creation to follow the same principles of maintenance and destruction. The foolish, conditioned soul who has taken this temporary world as a permanent settlement has to learn intelligently why such creation and destruction take place. Read that again. The foolish conditioned soul who has taken this temporary world as a permanent settlement has to learn intelligently why such creation and destruction take place. The fruitive actors in the material world are very enthusiastic in the creation of big enterprises, big houses, big empires, big industries, and so many big, big things out of the energy and ingredients supplied by the material agent of the Supreme Lord. With such resources and at the cost of valuable energy, the conditioned soul creates, satisfies his whims, but unwillingly has to depart from all his creations and enter into another phase of life to create again and again. To give hope to such foolish conditioned souls who waste their energy in this temporary material world, the Lord gives information that there is another nature which is eternally existent without being occasionally created or destroyed, and that the conditioned soul can understand what he should do and how his valuable energy may be utilized. Instead of wasting his energy in matter, which is sure to be destroyed in due course by the Supreme Will, the conditioned soul should utilize his energy in the devotional service of the Lord so that he can be transferred to the other eternal nature where there is no birth, no death, no creation, no destruction, but permanent life instead, full of knowledge and unlimited bliss. The temporary creation is thus exhibited and destroyed just to give information to the conditioned soul who is attached to temporary things. It is also meant to give him a chance for self-realization and not for sense gratification, which is the prime aim of all fruitive actors. Om agena tamyanda sha janan anjana shalakaya chakshu umritam yena tasmei shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam didati svapanantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava Gaur Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hari Ram, Hari Ram, 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 Hari Hare. So I was thinking, sometimes we hear, I would spend a little time with Brahmatirtha yesterday, of course, who's working with the BI and develop relationships with scientists and interact with science and how to use that as a means to share Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we hear that scientists are looking for what's that formula that you can put on your t-shirt that explains the whole universe. That's what they're looking for. That would be the holy grail of science. We want to figure it all out. There's that formula. We're going to find it one day. So in a sense, many of the sentences here could be that for us, and maybe this last one. What's the t-shirt formula of this universe? The temporary creation is exhibited and destroyed just to give information to the conditioned soul who is attached to temporary things. Dude, what's the purpose of this world? It's to give you information because we're too attached to temporary things about something supreme. So, and how it's all created and it's destroyed, as Prabhupada says in the purport, helplessly. The living entities helplessly watch things be created and destroyed, and it's unstoppable. So as we flew down here from Washington, D.C., and saw there was some ad, I think it's brand new, there's a new movie about Oppenheimer, who created the atom bomb. He had the crew up. And many of us have heard that he famously quoted the Bhagavad Gita, "Time I am," some question, maybe he said, "Death I am," when he saw the bomb go off. He said, you know, he quoted, so it kind of brought the Bhagavad Gita. So I read a couple articles, and a lot of people saying, well, what is this Bhagavad Gita? Why did he quote it? So it's interesting. Yet another reminder for people that, hey, there's some ancient knowledge here maybe you should take advantage of. But apparently he made some comment that the world would never be the same after the creation of this. And in some ways it's true. I mean, it's something people are always on the edge of their seat. You know, when will they use it? Right? Prabhupada says in the Gita, one of the purports, that demoniac people, they create horrible, well, Krishna says, horrible, unbeneficial acts meant to destroy the world. Prabhupada says in the purport, this is anticipating atomic weapons and how they'd be misused. So he said, Oppenheimer said the world would never be the same, but actually it's always the same. There's birth, there's death, there's old age, there's disease. There's just a new way of bringing that about, of manifesting that. And therefore, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes you think, I know when you read sometimes, even say like in the 10th canto, I remember you used to read like Krishna book, and it would be this really cool story about Krishna, you know, jumps in the river, or jumps out of the trees, or jumps off the mountain, and, you know, does some miraculous thing. Then there's like all these pages of prayers. And I was always thinking, can we get this done with? Let's get on with the story. You know, the story's good. These prayers are kind of boring, you know. And it's in the 10th canto, so it's kind of understood that we've studied, at least read through the previous 9 cantos, and then it gets to Krishna's Leela. So it's like, well, why do we have to continually going back to these commentaries that actually he's God, he can do these things, you know. But there's these constant reminders that keep this in context. This is not an ordinary person doing these things. So in the same way throughout the Bhagavatam, again and again, these reminders are there about how temporary this world is and about how unfulfilling it is. And therefore it's described in the Bhagavad Gita that those who have knowledge, they're pessimistic about this world. They see the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. And the fool, Prabhupada uses the word at least twice in the purport, the fool sees this temporary world as a permanent settlement. Just like, you know, America was like settled. In fact, the new thing now, relatively new, started in Canada before here. The new thing these days, at least conferences I go to as they begin, I was thinking I should do some research here. They begin their talks, whatever the conference, by saying, before we start, let's pause and recognize the such and such and such and such tribe that used to live here, and this was their land, and we took it. We should at least acknowledge that. I've been to a lot of conferences in Canada, and the Prime Minister started his talk like that. And in these TED Talks I mentioned I was at, they all started like that. And of course, those folks are gone. They've all been exterminated. There's a few groups of people here that most of those tribes have been gone. But then what happened? So we settled, or our ancestors settled, or somebody else's ancestors settled. And we, but so where are they? They also thought they're going to make a permanent settlement. Right? They made all these settlements. It's a common American word, settlements, as they moved across. Or you hear these days, you know, like in Israel, like this, the Jewish settlements in the area that the Palestinians still claim, and you know, it's a big fight over settlements. But Prabhupada's saying they're all foolish because it's all temporary. They're all temporary settlements. So therefore, devotees, we have this sense of pessimism. Just yesterday, I'm sure all of us get, maybe the ladies don't get these because they can tell ladies' names, but maybe I'm just so fallen, I track this energy. But periodically, get a message. I got a message, is this Alice? And I wrote back, no, it's not Alice. And, you know, if it said, is this Joe, I would have immediately been suspicious. But it said, is this Alice? I've been to some conferences, maybe. I said, no, it's not. So they got a message back, this is Ava, with a picture of a really pretty Ava. And of course, Ava didn't send that message. Who knows what Rakshasa sent to that message, you know? So I just thought Rukmini was doing something else. I was sitting in the car, so I wrote back. I wrote, dear Ava, or whatever your name really is, I said, please understand that by reaching out to people and trying to make some sexual contact or something, you're cheating yourself, you're cheating others, and what you're really looking for to fill that heart, that hole in your own heart, is a relationship with the divine. I didn't want to say Krishna because, I mean, maybe their mom's Catholic and maybe she'll wake up when she gets this message, you know? And I wrote a couple other things and I said, you know, I wish you the best. And then I sent that and immediately blocked it. Like, I don't want to have, this not going to become a dialogue here, you know? But like, whereas in the materialistic world, I mean, why do they send messages like that? Because there are enough foolish people out there that write back, oh, your name's Eva, you look pretty. Will you be my friend? You know, it's like, yeah, like, you know, used to get those messages. I think they quit this thing, but years ago get those messages. My name is Prince So-and-so. I'm in Nigeria. I've got $100 million and I just need a bank account to send it to. And I actually know a devotee who kind of fell for that and actually flew there. You know? Right? Or the more modern one is, this is your nephew, George, and I'm lost at the airport, I just need $300. So, you know, people, why do they send those messages? Because people fall for it. Why do they fall for it? Because they're foolish, and they're optimistic. Well, maybe, just maybe, I'll get some of that $100 million, right? They think like that. Or we had a preaching center in Las Vegas years ago, and people used to donate chips. Every once in a while, you had to go into the casinos to chip in. Like, you know, you have $100 worth of chips, and we never went alone. Because it was like the land of Maya. It's like ding, 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 people, you know, it's like every possible allurement is in there. But devotees are pessimistic about that. And around us, we see this confirmed in the scripture, that there's so many efforts going on, people trying to make themselves comfortable with the temporary settlements, Prabhupada said. And despite all of their efforts, that people aren't successful. You know, I think of a couple of stories. Prabhupada talked about the man that he knew who was dying. Very wealthy man saying to the doctor, doctor, I'll pay you anything. I just need 2 more years to finish my plans. I just need 2 more years. And of course, you know, even if he got his 2 more years, then he would have more plans, right? So Prabhupada said like that. And we went a few years ago, Gorvani was playing the kirtan at one of the yoga studios in the Bahamas. I can't remember the name of it right now.
But anyway,
Shivananda, thank you. It's right next to a big place called the Atlantis Hotel. And this phenomenal hotel, which is a whole other story. But I asked one time about who owns this place. And they said, well, it's a corporation. I said, but previously there was another owner. I said, really, what happened to the owner? He said, well, he took all his profits here and he invested in another Atlantis hotel and casino somewhere in the Middle East, lost everything, and had to sell it to a corporation. I said, oh, that's really sad. You know, it's the nature of the material world. And he said, yeah, that's not the saddest part. I said, what's the saddest part? He was an older man. He was planning to turn everything over to his son, who was maybe 40. The son was out looking for some new investment in a helicopter. The helicopter crashed, so he lost his money, he lost his empire, and he lost his son. So devotees hear that, it's like, yep, there it is, second canto, chapter 10, text 43. You know? And like, and how many other places, 100, maybe 1,000 places in this Shastra, it's there reminding us in so many ways. Prabhupada, right, he went to France, so profoundly said, so France is here, where's Napoleon? Isn't it? Very simple for us to think about, where's, you know. And I think maybe I mentioned this when I was here before. I was in Moscow a few years ago, driving on the road, and I think, as I remember, I must have been kind of half asleep or something. I opened my eyes and saw this beautiful like a architectural kind of dome thing. And I thought, I was, again, like, wait, I'm in Russia. That's in France. What, you know, it's like this kind of moment of, and I asked the voice, I said, what is that? I said, it looks like the Arc de Triomphe, which is what Napoleon built when he conquered Austria or something like that. And they said, yeah, well, that's our version. When we defeated Napoleon, we Russians built like what he, it's like people don't, Americans, they don't tell you about the Russians, all their great achievements so much. But so where's Napoleon? So he's gone. And it happens again and again and again. I mean, somebody, this recent horrible situation, wealthy family, super wealthy, billionaire people. Well, let's go down and see what happened. It's so unfortunate that Titanic died. Isn't it an interesting story? Millionaires died, thousands of people died, and all the ships down there, only 13,000 feet below sea level. So let's go with our modern technology. We can go down and enjoy seeing how powerful the material energy is. And unfortunately, as many of you know, something went wrong, and their little tiny submarine with the one of, among the six people there, one was the owner of the company, so that's his karma, and then a billionaire and his 19-year-old son, and they something went wrong, and the whole thing just crushed. Imagine the kind of pressure at 13,000 feet below sea level. All to do what? Looking, maybe this will make us happy. You know, we have so much money. Boring. Who wants to go skiing in the Alps? Boring. All our millionaire friends do that. We have a billion. What can we do? Well, maybe we can fly into space. Ah, that's the old hat. So many people fly into space these days. Let's go down and see the Titanic for whatever they paid. And now they're gone. So then teach material will. So therefore it's described, intelligent person questions, you know, why is this all going on? And Prabhupada mentions 8:19. Yeah, 8:19. So what does the Lord say there? Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being. And with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Same point. Come into being, helplessly annihilated. And then the next verse, the Prabhupada quotes here. And this is the part where Prabhupada says, Krishna gives us hope. So what is that hope? Yet, nice word. So helplessly annihilated. Yet, he says, there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested, in other words, created and then destroyed matter. It is supreme and never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as is. So this is the message of this verse, and ultimately it's the message of our philosophy, that there's another nature, and that the Lord gives hope that we can connect with that higher nature and actually find what everybody's looking for. And it describes in the Gita, right in the 15th chapter, talks about how, you know, there's this tree and it can't be perceived in its reality. And then that series of verses includes this. One should seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns. We should seek that place from which one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. So that's our key message for the world is, yeah, pessimistic here, but hopeful, you know, a real, like, you know, thank you, Ava, you look gorgeous, and I'm sure you have nothing to do but look for old 70-year-old guys like me to be happy with, right? I'm going to believe that, or I'm going to believe that maybe you're not really Ava, you're some really weird person in Bangladesh who's getting $1 an hour to like write nasty messages and somehow, you know, seduce me into sending you money or whatever you're looking for, right? That's my realistic assessment. But I can believe that, and I think we all have experience. I remember when I was first becoming a devotee, I have very conscious experience of slowly, slowly, my faith in the material world's going down, and slowly, slowly, my faith in Krishna's going up. And I couldn't give up this until I had that. Prabhupada gives the example like the caterpillar. It's got to be firmly fixed on the next leaf or branch before they can lift up their other side. So those two things have to go on in Krishna consciousness, and this is the process also of sharing Krishna consciousness, why it's so important how we interact with people, and how our communities present ourselves, And how we realize that every moment we ever exchange with another person could either draw them closer to Krishna or push them away from Krishna. Bhakti Tirthamaraj used to say that our preaching is taking away the obstacles between someone and the Lord, whatever that obstacle is. And it's different obstacles for different people. I mean, I remember sometimes going to, like, years ago, I used to go to, like, high school classes. I wanted to talk about how Krishna is the Supreme Father. And 20 years ago, I realized that doesn't work anymore. Because you say Supreme Father, and a third of the people in the room cringe. Don't tell me about a Supreme Father. I had a father. I know what father means. Father's bad. Father's bad news. I don't want to hear about there's some Supreme Father I'm supposed to... Like, that's a sad circumstance. You know, so, okay, don't say something that's going to build another obstacle for them. So then how do we keep this hopefulness alive? This Prabhupada's telling me we have to build this hope. So I was thinking about that a little bit, and four things came to mind. First of all, this, we have to have an honest assessment. This is where so many people are blocked off. An honest assessment, to be pessimistic about the world of birth, death, old age, and disease. It's beautiful. I mean, the bird just chirped outside. It's a beautiful creation. And yet, at the same time, it's created and destroyed, created and destroyed. So why am I thinking there's a permanent settlement there? I have to admit, there's no permanent settlement there. It can't satisfy me. So first thing, to be honest with ourselves and with other people, and encourage people to be honest. And then second, knowledge that there actually is an alternative. And I was remembering one time I was at the Indian Embassy in Washington, D.C. Some Indian Embassy? Maybe it was a British Embassy. I was talking with some young Indian people from South Asia. And I remember there was one guy and two or three girls, women, young women. And the women were like beautifully decked out, you know, 20, very attractive. And the guy was like a very handsome young man. And they were, I think, drinking and just kind of talking and schmaltzing as young people do. And it was really clear he was kind of showing off to these women. And I kind of, you know, happened to walk along, and I'm in my dhoti and started a conversation. They were in a kind of a nice way, a little bit kind of making fun of me about, you know, what do you really do and what are you really into? And he was like, yeah, I got this together. You're a monk, and why would you want to be a monk? I mean, you know, I'm making money, and I'm a success, and, you know, this whole thing. It went on for like 3-4 minutes, and I was thinking, okay, you know, maybe there's some purpose in my being here. And then the women walked away. And then he turned to me and said, you want to know the truth? I said, yeah. He said, I am miserable. But in front of them, he's got to show off. Because they look like something worth knowing, pursuing, enjoying. So I got to put on this whole facade. But as soon as as soon as that false hope, illusion goes away, then it's like, wow, I'm actually a pretty miserable guy. Which, of course, we all know all along. But people don't want to admit it. Why? Because they don't know there's an alternative. So we have to keep that knowledge first and foremost in our minds that there is an alternative. And therefore, Krishna comes again and again and again to show people there's an alternative. And when we go out in the streets, it's to convince people there's an alternative. I remember Jatari and I were in Boulder, Colorado, years ago, in the last century, as a matter of fact, with the preaching center. And there were some Buddhists in town. And they would wear saffron and kind of walk through down the street playing their gong or whatever they would play. And I can remember when they would walk by, everybody would kind of like stop and notice this person. And just their being there sent a really powerful message, which is basically, there's a whole other level of reality and values from what you're all doing. You know, it makes people stop and think, what am I doing? I was, same time around in Denver, I remember years ago, being on Harinam, I was a fairly new devotee. On Harinam downtown and chanting and dancing and all the things that Hare Krishna people do. And my eyes met this young guy walking down the street with a spiffy sport coat and tie. And I thought I recognized him. And you could see he recognized me, so came over and said, you know, Sam, is that you? Yeah, Jeff, is that you? My legal name, Jeff. I said, yeah. He was 1 year behind me in school, and we were like in some classes together. And then we started talking, and then he said to me, I can't believe it. I can't believe what you're doing. And I thought, okay, here it comes, you know. Time to get humble. He's going to tell me what an idiot I am, because I gave it. He said, I just can't believe it. He said, look at you. He said, look at me. No offense to Shesha Prabhu. He said, I'm just a lawyer. you know. So he's standing there talking to some guy in, like, you know, probably mismatched socks and, you know, tennis shoes and a dhoti that didn't match the shoe, whatever, in those days. But he had some vision. Wow, you actually understand there's an alternative. And I'm kind of sold out to something that I know isn't really going to make me happy. And you've got the courage to do that. So having that knowledge, and then, of course, so honest assessment, knowledge that there's an alternative. And then, of course, we're so blessed because Prabhupada came and gave us the process of bhakti so we can cleanse our hearts and develop this faith, develop the hope, become free from the chains that are binding us, which, of course, the most critical factor of that is association with devotees. You know, we have to so much relish. We're so fortunate, like this morning when Mukhya Prabhu said, I want to announce a very special event, ta-da, which is the birthday of a 5-year-old. Oh, okay. I guess I should just try to say a few words about Krishna. You know, without the association of devotees, I might believe that Ava really loves me, right? But I've got devotees to bring me back to that reality. So, to one extent or the other, we all have these different addictions. We have addictions, we're trying to free out. We have addictions to the material energy. Lord Chaitanya says, right, when I have no desire to accumulate wealth, to enjoy women, or have any number of followers. And it dawned on me recently, I was thinking, like, any number of followers, like, who wants followers? Followers means power. Again, living in D.C., it's all about power. But power really means how many people are your followers. You know, how many people are going to vote for you once again, etc. Those are followers. So people want power. I was speaking with a devotee yesterday talking about sometimes even as devotees, we need these kind of things. We have to recognize we have issues with these things about, you know, devotees with different types of addictions. And he said this little mantra I hadn't heard before. He was saying that alcohol addiction destroys brain cells. Let's give an example. Sex addiction destroys the soul, which is really profound. It's like, yeah. You start seeing everything as an object of exploitation. So we have these different things keep pulling us into the material world, but by devotee association, we're reminded, hey, what are you doing that for? That's not good for you. Look at him. He's the source of all beauty. That's not beautiful. That car won't satisfy you. That woman won't satisfy you. That man won't satisfy you. That money won't satisfy you. Going to the bottom of the ocean, 13,000 feet. What the heck are you allowing yourself to think about that? And with devotees, it's so wonderful because my Maya to you is like totally stupid. And what your Maya is to me is like totally stupid. And we can share that with each other. You're attracted to that? Are you crazy? Yeah, you're right. I'm a little crazy. You know? We can help remind each other. So this association is so critical, and that's why Prabhupada created, and as he writes some places in his purpose, he created the International Society of Krishna Consciousness just to give us the chance to have association. And that's what it's all about. So we can come together, take the shadam, chant together, you know, have celebrate the birthdays of a wonderful little 5-year-old boy who's trained to walk around and give you a burfi. Wow, that's beautiful, right? And to be able to come together and help each other in our Krishna consciousness. And as Prabhupada told us, we know, overstated sometimes, but so powerful, that if we actually love him, our love will be shown by how we cooperate together to keep a society together and to keep the community together. So sometimes we hear Prabhupada created a home in which the whole world can live. First and foremost, he created the home for us to live. This is our dad's house. It's like when you're a little kid, right? And your mom and your dad, they create a house, and maybe there's a garage, and there's a bicycle, and maybe there's a little swimming pool in the backyard some of us maybe had, or whatever it is. You know, these days, whatever, they bought you a new game or something. Like my dad, my mom, they gave me those things. So Prabhupada actually gave us ISKCON. It's our father's gift to us. And he created it in a certain way. You know, he created ISKCON, he gave us the 7 purposes. It was Prabhupada created temple presidents. It was his idea, it was his vision. Prabhupada created the GBC. Prabhupada created the BBT. And we talk a lot about how, and we remember how Prabhupada miraculously, just superhumanly, would stay up all night. We hear about this. Stay up all night while his disciples, young men and women, were sleeping, exhausted from trying to keep up with them during the day. But he's up translating his books. which is glorious, and we should never forget that. But we also shouldn't forget what he was doing during the day. It's not like he was snoozing during the day so he could write his books at night. All day long he was working to what? To build and protect his community. To build and protect his ISKCON society. To build and strengthen devotees. And we're so fortunate that he created this for us and that he's given us this opportunity that we can take advantage of. And we should remember, as he points out in the Bhagavad Gita, even on the royal road, there's danger. So we have our ISKCON society, we have our community devotees, we have processes of spiritual leadership and people that we work with, we work under. And we're very blessed and very fortunate. We should take full advantage of that. And at the same time, keep in mind that there's danger even on the royal road. And one of the main dangers of communities, of organizations, of tribes, of religions, of entities, of organizations, is pride. People can become proud. You know, like Prabhupada says, that even the pauper becomes proud of their penny. So, I mean, I do like a little bit of traveling, interact with people. It's amazing how many religious groups out there kind of think they're the only one. It's amazing. You know, there's a joke about how somebody died and went to heaven and whatever's at the gate, you know, Giant Vijay or St. Paul or whoever's there, Peter at the gates. And they told him, you go anywhere you want. Welcome to heaven, you go anywhere you want. They said, he says, thank you. So he walked around, he saw this big wall. And he could hear there were other people over there, but he couldn't get over the wall. He went back and said, hey, Peter, you told me I could go anywhere I want. I just found this place, I'm walled off. So you can fill in the name of what group, so I'll say it's us just for the sake of it. So they said, oh, he said, don't mind that. That's the Hare Krishnas on the other side. They think they're the only ones here. So the version I originally heard was the Mormons. So you know, whatever, the Mormons are Catholic. They think they're the only ones here. So there's this tendency to become prideful and to think we're the only ones, or to think, you know, my tribe's the best, my understanding of Prabhupada is the best, you know, my temple is the best, my region of ISKCON is the best, my gender is the best, my nationality is the best. These are all, it's all Maya. It's all pride. Tamahar Prabhu, I met with him yesterday, he was reminding me. He was saying in his readings how he's reading some of the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he just drives his point again and again how important it is to be humble. Humble, 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 humble. If you're not humble, there's no progress in spiritual life. And of course, you know, Lord Chaitanya said you can't chant the holy name without humility. And we know the whole process of this age is chanting the holy name. So where are we if we don't have humility? And we see in the world around us, and we see in our organization, if we're not humble, we become arrogant, we exploit, and we abuse. As I think it's a biblical expression, pride cometh before the fall. So we have to be very careful that we don't think that we can't become proud. We are subject to the same allurements and illusions that attract and befall other people. And those of us, as the movement moves on, we have to be careful to study our own history, because as is explained, if you don't know history, you're destined to redo it. So sometimes there's forget what state I'm in, but there are people in the country and looking in America these days are saying, we don't want to teach these things of our history. Like, maybe I mentioned Sunday, I have a friend in Russia and we were in Moscow, and devotee friend we grew up with, and she was explaining, yeah, well, you know, what I learned about America, what they teach us is that America was built by killing all the natives and enslaving everybody. And I was like, no, actually, we were founded on Thomas Jefferson, and all people are created equal, and, you know, Johnny Appleseed, and, you know, George Washington through the quarter, or the dollar, you know. And it's like, you know. And like, yeah, there's some good stuff, but there's some horrendous stuff. And if we're not aware of the horrendous stuff, we're going to repeat the horrendous stuff. And these days, you know, there's a whole move in the United States. Don't teach that stuff. You can't talk about the negative stuff. You're going to bring us down. We're going to, like, deflate our pride. Frankly, that's what they're saying. Don't deflate our pride. Our process is you got to deflate your pride, because then you can be humble, and then you can approach Krishna in a caring mood. Oh, Lord, I need you, Lord, please engage in your service. Which is why I'm so grateful. Krishna said, this five-year-old boy is important, not you, Anudama. Get it through your stupid head. Sit down and say a few things, but don't think you're saying anything. Try to do some service. So this pride is such an important thing for us to avoid. And as a community, this is part of the reason I'm speaking this, because this is such a mature community of Krishna conscious devotees, so many senior devotees here, and Alatra really can speak this and exhibit this and put this into practice. We need to make sure we have checks and balances within our society. As soon as we think we don't need checks and balances, we are in big trouble. I think I did mention the other day this one group called Legionnaires of Christ. They had a vow, you cannot criticize superiors. And the guy in charge became a sexual abuser. He was, you know, man. He was sexually abusing nuns. He was sexually abusing children. Nobody could talk about it. Nobody could tell anybody. It was a big mess. You know, we've seen recently in our international headquarters, yet again, another expose of a senior leader who behind the scenes, I don't think anybody in any position of authority knew, but we all should have asked more questions. This doesn't look right. This doesn't smell right. This doesn't feel right. What's going on? But if we create a culture that out of respect, you can't ask. If you respect me, you ask me, Nunama, what are you doing? In a respectful way. Hey, Nunama, I noticed like you got this message. I showed my wife, actually. Like, hey, Rukmini, I got a message from Ava. This is where I responded to her, you know? And I'm deleting it now, you know? And I'm deleting it because in my mind it's like, well, that's a pretty nice picture. Maybe I should keep that picture, you know? No, I got to get out of my phone, you know? I don't want that picture. So we need to have that kind of culture where we're simultaneously so respectful of others, especially seniors, especially, you know, the temple president, the BBT trustees, the GBC, the senior devotees. We should have the guru. We should have respect for all these people. And at the same time, we have to create a culture which is, we are strong together. We're not strong individually. Prabhupada said to the GBC members famously, right? None of you are intelligent. He said, okay, you're in charge of the whole movement. But by the way, none of you are intelligent. Like, Prabhupada, can you explain that a little bit better? You know, and then he said, you know, Ramachandra's a little intelligent. But he said, together you're intelligent. Together you're intelligent. But the danger is we start thinking, you know, I'm particularly intelligent. I heard a scary story. I'm not going to name the person, but some of you may have heard this before. When I was in Europe recently with devotees, they said, yeah, we had a leader. One of the gurus here, one time he was asked, to me, it was like, ah, oh, Krishna, what's the difference between you and Jesus? He was publicly asked in public, what's the difference between you and Jesus? And his answer was 2,000 years. Whoa. You know, everybody else in the room should have stood up and said, hey, we got a problem, you know, and we need to report you to the proper people because your head is screwed on wrong. And we need to fix this, and we love you dearly, but you are bewildered. You are really, really bewildered. And if you're that bewildered, you can't lead us. We need to talk about this. So that's how deep it can become. We all know, like, you go to New Vrindavan, they've been pretty honest about their history. They've got panels, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and then there's, like, one big panel, like, I don't know what it is, like, the period of darkness or something like that. You know, there's some name, you know, the period. Because it's like, hey, we were doing really good, and wow, did we get covered over. And we know, law breaking, go to prison, power abuse, sexual exploitation, child abuse, etc. So these things can happen, even in the most royal world, there can be danger. So this is kind of what's talked about in this verse. It's interesting. The whole thing is going to be blown up. You know, it's like, how negative, but there's hope. Why is there hope? Because there's another reality. So in the same way, honesty about how difficult this world is and our own addictions and addictions we're trying to get free from or addictions that are still there in the back of our mind and we're everyday chanting and following sadhana bhakti to get more and more pure. So acknowledging that and simultaneously so hopeful. Not hopeful based on my strength, but hopeful based on Krishna, hopeful based on the mercy of the Vaishnavas, hopeful based on the process of bhakti that I can overcome this. So we have a really important duty to protect our own bhakti lata bija, but also protect each other and to create that environment. I mean, I think it's one of the most critical things that we make sure is established before all of the senior most devotees leave this world, which is a culture of openness and accountability and transparency. It's got to be there, or else we're creating a culture which in the future is going to be a huge, huge problem. So I feel a little kind of spiritually proud sometimes when I go to some of these different meetings. And I've told people, like in anti-cult organizations, you know, you need to look at us a little closely. We may be the, I don't know for sure, but we may be the only organization in the world that before you become a guru, you got to take a course. And people check you out. And if you're going to be a disciple, you got to take a course. And part of that course is, what do you do if your guru goes off the deep end? You know, and sometimes we hear like there may be places in the world, it's like, well, we want to teach that. You're going to plant that kind of doubt in somebody's mind. Don't you want them to have absolute faith and pure faith? And, you know, the guru is a Christian's representative. It's like, yeah, but also they have a duty to maintain. You know, for those of us that are proper disciples, like, well, yeah, but they're also God brothers and God sisters. So we got, you know, extra responsibility to each other. So this culture is so important that it gives. And Prabhupada talks about hope. This is one of the great things we should have hope in. You know, like there's bumper stickers sometimes. I'll clean it up. Stuff happens, right? Stuff does happen. And it's going to happen. It's happened in the past in ISKCON. Probably stuff going on today. There's stuff going to be happening in the future. We shouldn't be surprised about that. Even Prabhupada said about individuals, don't be surprised who leaves Christian consciousness, right? That's a pretty heavy statement from the founding tribe. Be surprised who stays. That's pretty heavy. Don't be surprised who leaves. That gives us some sense of how, what a risk he thought it was, the material energy. So stuff's going to happen, but the real question is how we respond to that stuff. So I would just request all of us, when stuff happens, when things go wrong, when there's problems which will come, whether it's in our family, in our extended community, in our temple, in our region, in ISKCON or whatever, don't lose hope because of that, but be determined. We need to do whatever we can to help assure we're accountable, we're transparent, and we act at the highest level of transparency and integrity and Krishna consciousness. And if we do that, then together, as Prabhupada said, we'll have the intelligence to be successful. We'll have the blessings of Krishna, right? Just like with the Prajetas, right? The Lord appeared and said, because you're working together, you pleased me. So part of working together is creating that culture where we have so much faith and love and trust for each other, but we know Maya's too strong. Maya's too strong. So if you walk by and see me on my phone, I'm looking at Ava. You got to say, Anudama, what are you doing? It's like, no, here's the, I just wrote this. So I look at this message I'm sending, and then I'm going to delete it. Because otherwise, it's like, well, Anudama's looking at Ava. Well, maybe he's doing something special. Well, maybe not. And we've seen too many maybe nots. Too many maybe nots. And we want to protect us today and into the future. If we create that culture, we'll be a lot safer. We'll be a lot more powerful, a lot more honest. And people see that when they come here and they see these people honest about their own limitations, their own humble effort to try to make the world a better place, to try to awaken their love of God. These people are for real. It's not just superficial. It's not like rah, 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 and then you scratch the surface and there's a mess behind it. But it's like rah, 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 and they're honestly, openly trying their best in a mood of humility, depending totally on Him. And that's the environment that Prabhupada wanted us to create, as I understand it. We have a sacred duty to do so. So I'll stop there. I got like 30 seconds left for questions. That's kind of my pattern. Yes, Prabhu.
This is very nice. I can relate because I was going through a little bit like that. And
can you hold the mic up?
I appreciate your presentation about how the leaders should have a very high level of transparency. My question is also, Prabhupada says, individual ownership turns sand into gold. So if everything has to be collective, if we do not give individual freedom to execute a big thing, how would you, or maybe you can explain this. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Well, yeah, we have to. I mean, our whole thing is, Prabhupada said, ISKCON is meant to create independently thoughtful men, and we understand women. That's what our society is meant to create. But being independently thoughtful doesn't mean I'm not accountable to anybody. If I'm in some leadership role, whether that means I'm a father or a mother, or, you know, I'm a 5-year-old boy with a 3-year-old brother, you know, that's also a leadership role. Whatever that leadership role is, then my individual creativity, my God-given creativity, I should definitely engage in the service. But again, I still have to be accountable to people. That's a big way we avoid making mistakes, too. I've got this great idea, A, B, C, and D. It's like, one more joke, maybe you've heard it. A couple guys driving down the road. Actually, there's a carload of people driving down the road, and there's two people in front of a church with big signs that say, turn back now. And the other one has a sign that says, the end is near. And the car drives by, and they look at these people, and a whole bunch of religious nuts, and they're laughing and joking, and ha ha, this is ridiculous. They go around the corner, and you hear a big crash. And the one guy holding the sign turns to the other one and says, you know, that's the third car this morning. Do you think we should rewrite the sign and just say the bridge is out? So, you know, we have to be clear. You know, it's a dangerous road, and we've got to, you know, make sure the messages are clear. So being accountable doesn't mean you lose your creativity. Doesn't mean there's no room for individual spontaneity and all of that. But, you know, both have to be there. It's like you go to school and the teacher says at the end of class you got to put all your crayons away. But in the meantime, wow, go to it, you know. Don't draw on the wall, but, you know, go on the paper, whatever you're inspired to do. Yes, please.
Yeah, really nice class. And you made an interesting point that is relevant. A lot of people, if you talk about the Supreme Father, it's an absolute disaster. Because their experience of family.
Angle the mic a little more.
Yeah, some people, you mentioned when you speak about the absolute father, it turns into an absolute disaster because they shut down immediately because their family experience was incredibly abusive.
Yes.
And something that I think about is the tendency to assume things about people when we want to talk to them. And at least for me personally, I've noticed that if you assume the wrong thing and say something, you hit a point where someone shuts down immediately, and it's the end of the conversation. So how do we approach people without, I know what this person needs, but more of a, who is this person? How can I understand them? And how can I connect to them in a way where I'm actually giving them what they need from where they are, not what I think they need?
Yeah, really good point. First of all, don't make assumptions. I was in Mayapur for years ago, I can still see it. I was standing in a building, a place that I stayed regularly, and there was a family, husband and wife, and they had one child, and I hadn't seen them in 2 or 3 years, and, you know, we're kind of like family friends, and I saw the lady, and I, you know, young childbearing age, and, you know, people that age have a couple kids, and I said, Mataji, congratulations, you know, because she was big, but she wasn't pregnant. And I can't remember, she like melted me in the ground with her stares or, you know, the sky. But somehow or other, you know, it was like, whoa, what a stupid mistake. You know, I assumed the wrong thing, you know, and that was, oh my goodness. She was not happy with that. So yeah, so in communications, we talk about you need to understand the needs, interests, and concerns of others. So, right, Stephen Covey says something like that, right? First seek to understand, then to be understood. So it's an important thing that we do that. You know, we hear from others, we learn from others first, understand their situation. You know, like you gave in a Sunday feast lecture, you talk about renunciation. The room's full of like young families with 3 kids and 2 jobs and a mortgage. It's like, come on, maybe that's what I need to hear. I need to be sensitive to what do they need to hear. What's going to help them? So that's very important, because if we really want to, you know, a little bit, I know devotees now, we're becoming so much better at helping each other in different phases of life. I've heard devotees that train these things about like end-of-life care or crisis, that to be able to, that, you know, somebody passes away, and sometimes a devotee who's well-intended, perhaps, but not so knowledgeable will say, well, you know, hey, your mom, she wasn't that body. You probably had a lot of mothers and past lives and, you know, sukha dukkha, and, you know, you get over it, whatever. But, like, so who am I speaking for? Am I speaking out of a concern to help them or because I want to feel myself I'm a big preacher? You know, am I really doing the mood of serving them or am I, you know, just really serving my own need to think I'm a big preacher? So again, what are the needs, interests, concerns? And not that I'm good at it, but I'm just repeating what, you know, what we can try to do. You know, when you meet people like that that really care about you, boy, can they change you. You can really, really respond to that when you can see they actually care about me. They're not just telling me something they've heard they should tell me. Anything from the ladies' side? Yes.
Prabhu, very nice class, very interesting. You mentioned something about liquor destroys the brain, but sex destroys
addiction,
the soul.
Sexual addiction.
Sexual
addiction. To alcohol destroys the brain, addiction to sex. This is just, it's not Shastra, it's just something the devotee told me recently that I thought was powerful. So
does this have something, when you said that sexual desire destroys the soul, so does...
Sexual addiction
destroys the soul.
Yeah.
Now does this have, is this related to one of the regulated principles, illicit sex? How does this relate to illicit sex? And if it does, even householders have a challenge with that, since sexual intercourse is supposed to be for procreation and not just for sense enjoyment.
You're not supposed to ask a question like that at 8 minutes after the hour. But I can repeat one thing that I think is very wise. A few years ago, there was some discussion, because there are certain places in Prabhupada purports where he says, illicit sex is outside of marriage, and that's all he says. And there's other places where Prabhupada says illicit sex means anything not for procreation. So there was like some discussion, and it came up to the GBC, hey, you need to make some statement on this, because people are saying that, full stop, anything within marriage is okay. That is licit to do that. So in the room, and I remember this very clearly, one of the senior GBC members said, we were going around discussing. He said, I was in the room, a devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm having trouble controlling my sex desire. Prabhupada slammed his hand on the desk and said, but you promised. So the whole room was like, gulp, right? Okay, that's pretty powerful. And then someone else spoke, a senior sannyasi, who said, I was in the room, devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm having trouble controlling my sex desire, I'm seeing prostitutes. Prabhupada's response was, but you have a wife. Which the GBC members took it as, and then later discussion, there's an official, policy that Prabhupada was clear, this is what the ideal standard should be for those. Sex life, for those who take vows, should only be for the purpose of procreation. That's the ideal scenario. The GBC reestablished that. And I can't quote it, we understand that couples, the devotees, I'm going to say couples of devotees, may have difficulty maintaining that strict standard throughout their lives, and they should continue to strive for it, and if they do so, Krishna will help. So that's like our official policy. There's some, maybe some different nuances in what people teach, but I think the basic idea remains that ideally this is what we should all be doing. And at the same time, we recognize that, there's challenge. The material world is a tough place. So do the best we can. I was speaking with a devotee yesterday who was saying, I teach people this is, let's focus on direction and not just perfection. I give another example. Sometimes you hear, hopefully this is not happening anywhere these days, but we used to hear about there'd be a family. Often, it's not always, but usually the man is the one that's like over on drive, okay? It's more sexual desire. But sometimes you hear, so the wife is trying to be very strict. I've got a guru and I made promises and this is inappropriate and we got a child and you're not able to follow the principles, so I divorce you, okay? Because you're not able to follow the principles. Now you have a woman with a child without a husband. And you have a husband without a wife. He's still sexually agitated, so he's going to find another wife. He's going to have the same problems all over again. She now is a woman in a society that, you know, I hear from some ladies, this gun's not the most favorable place for single women. Maybe it's better than a lot of places, but it's not the most favorable place. Who has a child, who doesn't have a father. So it's most women in that situation, they're going to find another husband. And what's the other husband going to come with? Why is he getting married? Because he got sex desire. So there's a pretty good chance he's going to have to work it out in their marriage as well. So then you end up with, maybe she marries somebody else who has sex desire, let's say inappropriately or whatever, can't maintain the principle strictly. So now they have trouble or they get divorced. So on and on and on. So better, I think that's what the GBC was saying, just work it out within the institution that's given to us to work it out. That would be my reflections with 12 minutes after the hour.
Thank you.
Is that okay? Okay. Phew. Pooh, you want to talk about prashadam or something like that? We have one more question about, like, you know, what's my favorite kind of halava or, you know. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
How can the devotees in the community approach their GBC? I mean, is there some contact or whatever?
Yeah, I mean the GBC body? Oh, okay, I can
you,
share some.
You.
Okay, well, one thing, the GBC, one of the good things that's happening is the GBC body, for years and years, maybe you know, I mean, anybody know what the total budget is for the Governing Body Commission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? No, it's a little more than that. It's about $130,000 a year. So the Global Ministry of Communications gets $4,500. The Deity Ministry gets like $10,000 to supplement his washing dishes so he has a way of maintaining himself. The ISKCON Resolve gets like $8,000. Executive Committee gets like $4,000 to pay for plane tickets. It's like peanuts, you know? I mean, these isn't there like some new tax policy? Like Biden said something like, I'm not going to raise taxes over anybody that makes less than like $200,000 a year or something like that. And they're like, wait a minute, the whole ISKCON only has 130, you know, at its leadership level. So very, very, very under-resourced. So one positive thing recently is a commitment from the GBC. They've established something that's about to be announced recently with four people as an executive staff that are highly trained people. One of whom's job, whose name is Parijata Devi Dasi, is going to be to help with communications. Because right now we don't get a lot of information from the GBC. We don't know where to talk to the GBC as a body. And also to help them kind of be more in touch with what's going on with the devotee world around, devotees around the world, and to help, you know, create an administration. We don't have administration. We have leadership. Again, I go to some of these meetings and there's like the mayor's there and he says, okay, here's the policy. And then he hands it to a secretary who hands it to her secretary, hands it to his secretary, whose job it is to get it done. When, as far as a GBC member comes to you, it's like, okay, add it to the pile. You know, except some maybe have a lot of disciples and that assist them, but a lot of us don't have much assistance. So that's a real limitation. That's being addressed, because that shouldn't continue for the next generation, in my sense. But particularly, for now you're stuck with me, so I can give you my WhatsApp number later. But in general, we're trying to build a better process. Okay? So I think we should stop there. Thank you all very much. Appreciate all the devotees. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.